Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Fistful of cash.
What is going on, ladies and gentlemen? You are tuned into the newest episode of the Fistful of Cash podcast. I'm your host, Dale Lippitt, and here with the co-hosts of all co-hosts, Soup. What's going on, man?
Nothing much. Just finished up watching the Penguins get their home opener win against the Capitals. Watching the Pats. They're up 24-3 at half. So pretty good Thursday as far as sports goes, as far as my fandom is concerned. But I know we got a lot to get to. We've got UFC 229. We've got NFL. We've got college. So I'll keep it short. Just happy to be here and ready to go.
I'm right there with you, man. It's been a doozy of a week. I cannot wait to just park it in front of the TV on Saturday night and just absolutely watch a bunch of high-quality punch face go down. UFC 229 will be on in every TV in my house, so that way I don't miss anything. We've got some big stuff planned tomorrow night, as you know, but I will probably have it playing on in the background while that's going on. All that to say, or reaffirm what you have already said, it's going to be a massive weekend. We've got a ton to cover. We normally dilly-dally around or pitter-patter, but we're not going to pitter-patter. We're just going to get at her. Let's start talking NFL football. What do you like? What don't you like this weekend?
So the first game that I like this weekend is the Browns and Ravens. I like the over in this game. The Ravens' offense has looked really good. I think their 13 of their 14 possessions into the red zone have converted into touchdowns. I think the only one they didn't have was the strip on the inch line that Alex Collins gave up last week against the Steelers. Baker Mayfield, again, is going to have the green light to just sling the rock around the field. They're coming off a 570-yard performance against the Raiders, big loss in overtime. But I know the Ravens defense is way better than the Raiders defense, but I expect the Ravens to get up to a big early lead, and I can see just Baker tossing the ball around, Nick Chubb getting some carries. He's got the explosiveness to break off a big run like he did last week. This offense is totally different with Baker in there rather than Tyrod. Tyrod's more of a manage the clock, pick up first downs, get to third and shorts. Baker on first down, he's going to come out and throw it 40 yards down the field. And the Ravens, like I said, their offense looks great. The Browns defense has started out good, but has now looked piss poor the past 2 weeks. So, I think the over, I think it's at 45. I think the over hits in this one.
I'll say one thing about the Browns, and, I've been pining for Baker since he got in the league. last week was a wake-up call for him when you could see in his face he realized that he couldn't just sling the ball in hopes to get bailed out by decent receivers and half-assed DBs. So I think that he's going to come out and he's going to be a little bit – don't get me wrong. He's going to be you can't take the gunslinger out of him. But,
no, he's going to have to throw the ball 45 times if they want a chance at winning this game.
Right. I looked for him to be a little bit more calculated in his throws than he was last week. He was just he's throwing into triple coverages and stuff like that. And it doesn't matter who you're playing in the NFL. Maybe the Steelers secondary. You just can't do that. You can't get away with it. It's going to catch up with you. So, yeah, I like that. I like that over. Like you said, the Ravens look fantastic against the Steelers. I mean, that game could have easily been 28-3 going into halftime. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Sorry. No. Go ahead. Finish your thought.
Go ahead. No.
It's a.
I like the 45 in this. The Browns are going to put up at least 17 by themselves, and you know it's not the Ravens will hang 30 on them just to. For the sake of winning. So I like that 45. I think 45 is low for this game. I like the over on that too. I'm with you 100%. What was your side note? Sorry.
So coming into the season, who would have thought through the first 4 weeks, the Browns would have been part of arguably the most exciting game each week. So Browns Steelers week 1, you've got a tie because of two terrible kicking games and just ridiculous. Just what a series of events that was.
Yeah.
Week 2 against the Saints, another just meltdown by the Browns. They had that game, and then, you know, the missed kick to send it into overtime. Week 3, Baker hits the field, gets the comeback win against the Jets. And then last week, was it 87-point shootout with the Raiders in overtime?
Yeah.
So, obviously the Chiefs and the Rams are – more appealing to the eye, but as far as competitive football games go, the Browns have been, you know, in arguably the most competitive game each week. And I mean, I would never would have guessed that in a million years.
Well, I mean, listen, it's suitable, you know, from their name to where they're from. You know, the Cleveland Browns, they're fast, they're hot, and they're brown. Just like all things in Cleveland, they stink. So it's just I was initially on board that they were going to win the division, but yes, they're in exciting games, but they're like diarrhea, man. They're fast and hot and brown. So what else you like NFL wise?
The other game that I like this weekend is Denver Broncos against the Jets. It's coming into the pick 'em right now. For those of you who don't know what a pick'em is, there's no spread. So it's just an even. It's a coin toss. They're coming in at a minus 110 or minus 115 maybe, depending on what book you're looking at. I like the Broncos to get this win in New York. They've had a tough schedule, I guess. The Jets aren't good. I expect – Denver played really, really well against Kansas City. Talking to a buddy of mine who is, you know, a big Patrick Mahomes fan, and I don't blame him. You know, the guy's exciting. But for 3 quarters, Denver really contained Patrick Mahomes. And then they went into this prevent defense up by 10, thinking that they had this game, in the bag. And Mahomes was able to, you know, pick him apart, pick the zone apart, and get downfield and win the game. I think Denver's defense, just like the Jags secondary did, will shut Sam Darnold down. Chris Harris is going to have himself a game. And I really, really, really enjoy the running back tandem of Royce Freeman and Lindsey. So Lindsey's a little road runner, man. That guy goes 150% every single play. He's small. He's got a chip on his shoulder. He's got something to prove. He's not afraid to take a hit. And Royce Freeman's really turning into a good running back. He had a really nice touchdown run against the Chiefs. I think Case Keenum will do enough to enough not to lose this game, I guess. I like, you know, obviously Demaryius Thomas and Manny Sanders. But Sutton, their rookie receiver at SMU, kid's a beast. He goes up and gets jump balls. I just think that they're – both defenses are good. I just think Denver's offense gives them the edge in this game, and I think Denver wins this game on the road.
I think so too. Denver's looked better. I think they're meeting and exceeding expectations on the season. Yeah, I'm with you. I think this is the right call. I don't necessarily believe that it's a pick 'em. I feel like it should be a little bit more in Denver's favor. But as you said, I mean, the game is pretty evenly matched. I just think Denver will continue to exceed expectations and continue to play well. So I'm on board with that pick 100% too. I like Denver.
So I know that like last week we ran through some stuff, like terms we use and stuff like that. One thing here, for those of you who don't understand how spreads and lines are made, a rule of thumb, it's like an unspoken rule. It's not necessarily written down. As far as spreads go, the home team normally gets about 3 points. So if this were held at a neutral site, we'd be looking at something closer to a Denver -3. If this was Denver at home, we'd be looking at probably Denver -5.5, -6. But since it's in New York and Denver has to travel cross country, that's where the pick'em's coming from. At least that's what I've always been told, and that's my understanding from speaking to, you know, some connections I have in Las Vegas. The unwritten rule is the home team normally gets about 3 points.
And so justifiably so too.
Yeah, that helps to clarify your thought on, you know, you think it should be Denver minus a few points. At a neutral site, it'd be Denver -3.
Right. Well, that makes sense to me. All right, let's continue on with some football real quick. College football, what do you like? What don't you like?
This is the one that you were adamant on, and I normally present the football picks and you present the combat picks, but I'm gonna let you go ahead and throw this one out there. I'm gonna let you, your pick of the week. What is it?
My pick of the week is Georgia Tech Louisville. I like Georgia Tech coming in at -4.5. Louisville has looked terrible. Georgia Tech runs that triple option, and Louisville lets up a ton of yards on the ground. I think it's like 168 a game. And I think the big story this game, though, is going to be takeaways. Georgia Tech has had 11, one of which led to was a pick six for a touchdown. Louisville, only 2 takeaways on the year. That's it. So I feel like their defense will be a non-factor when it comes to this triple option. And I think that once they get down and they start slinging the ball and trying to play catch-up, Georgia Tech's defense is going to be there to shut it down and limit those possessions. The other thing about Georgia Tech, too, is they run they eat clock. So, it's going to be – I like them at the 4.5. For all of those reasons and just the eyeball test of Louisville just not being very good this year, I like Georgia Tech in this game. You got anything to add?
Yeah. So like you said, Georgia Tech's defense has come up with 11 takeaways. Louisville is, I think, the third worst in college football with a turnover margin of like 0.12 or so. It's ridiculous. It's terrible. Louisville's offense is dead last in the ACC, averaging just over 300 yards per game. It's a lot, I don't want to say it's all their offensive line's fault, but man, you got to put some fault on the offensive line. They can't keep defenses out of the backfield to save their life, and it's shutting their running game down, which is forcing them to pass a lot. And as we all know, Lamar Jackson is no longer there. Their passing game is just as bad as their offensive line play. I don't think Georgia Tech's offense is going to need to score that many points, and the best defense is an offense that controls the clock, because you keep your defense off the field, you keep them fresh. So right. If the defense can force two or three turnovers and let that triple option eat away this clock, I think the time of possession is really going to tell the story of this football game. -4.5, I agree it's low. I would think more of Georgia Tech -6.5, something like that. It's a home game on Friday night for Louisville. But Georgia Tech's running game is going to be too strong. They've gone for over 320 yards or more against everybody except for Clemson, which you can't fault them for that. I mean, Clemson's front seven is one of the best in the country. I think Georgia Tech, out of the 60-minute game, will probably be on the field for about 40 of it. And I think that's enough to get them the easy win. I'm going to say Georgia Tech 31-24.
I like it. It's a very generous 24 towards Louisville, too, but I understand it's a home game for them. So, I mean, to think that they're not going to put up at least a decent number would be ridiculous, but I feel like that's a generous. But, again, I still, we're in agreement with the Georgia Tech number. What else you like?
Another game that you and I both talked about earlier in the week, which it's actually the line is going in the opposite direction of what we thought it would. They opened at a -3. They're down to a -1.5 now, and that's LSU at Florida. We like LSU money line in this game. This is the same thing as the Oregon last week, the -1.5. We're just going to take the money line. The difference, the -125, -110, not a big enough difference to risk LSU only winning this game by one. I think LSU's offense might have turned a corner. Burrow looked good against Auburn. He threw for 250 yards. He was really sharp against Ole Miss last week. This Florida defense, they're good. This is what Florida's known for. Year in and year out, Florida is known for a nasty defensive line and a good secondary that can, lay the boom. That's one thing that Florida has year in and year out. They're third in the nation in turnover margin and fifth in takeaways. But LSU is also eighth in the country in turnover margin and leads the SEC in the fewest turnovers. They've only given the ball up three times this year. LSU's defense is no joke either. I don't believe in the Gators offense. I don't believe in like Felipe Franks or whoever they're going to start at quarterback, whatever they go with here. I don't believe in it. That's been Florida's biggest trouble ever since they lost Tim Tebow. I mean, they had Will Grier and they couldn't even make Will Grier look good. And look what he's doing in West Virginia. The guy, it's him and Haskins hunting Heisman down. I don't think Burrow is going to have to take many chances in this game. I think that they'll be able to move the ball, and it's going to be a low-scoring affair. But the only reason we didn't go with the over-under is because it is at 43, and that is, that's super low for college. The last four times these guys have played, it's been a great game decided by 7 points or less. LSU money line, I think it's the right play. I think they're more consistent on offense. They both have good defenses. This is just like the Denver game. I just think the offense is more consistent, and I think it will win the game versus Florida's offense going out and winning the game. I'll say LSU 23, Florida 20.
I can get on board with that. I like LSU in this game a lot for all the reasons that you said. Plus, it's Coach O. So, I mean, it's really hard to root against Coach O.
Yeah, boy, he went from one of the hottest seats in the country to sitting on a block of ice.
Yeah.
Nobody expected LSU to come out 5-0 this year by any means.
Oh, he's a hero right now.
Right.
He's a hero in Baton Rouge.
That's right.
Coach O going to take the national championship.
His sound clip from last week, man, it was something along the lines of, "Well, we don't care who you are. We're going to come hit you." And yeah. If that doesn't make you want to run through a brick wall, I don't know what does. You know, Cocho's voice, his demeanor, just everything about him, it's hard not to like the guy. And like I said, LSU at 5-0, I didn't see this coming. I don't know if anybody in the country saw it coming except for Cocho. And I think 6-0 is in their future.
Yeah, I mean, Cocho looks like the only toys he had growing up were spare tires. And he just sat out in the yard and chewed him like a pit bull. That guy is wild, man. Yeah, for sure. I might follow Cocho right off of a cliff if need be. All right. So that's going to do it as far as free picks football-wise are concerned. We're going to have more football picks on our Patreon page, patreon.com/fistfulofcash. We have seen a lot of traction there this last week. It's been a big week. The community continues to grow. We're super thankful for all you guys. We're also thankful for those of you that are sort of sitting on the fence that were sort of thinking about joining us. You enjoyed a flawless weekend of football last weekend and you're still sitting on the fence. We're hoping that this will be the weekend that tips you in the favor, puts the scales on the side of you leaving that iTunes review, joining the Patreon page, you know, any of the stuff, following us on social media, any of those things to help this community grow. That's what we're after. Like I said, in just about every episode, we want to be a community, an army of bettors that the bookmakers tremble whenever they see us coming. And if we keep putting up the numbers that we're putting up using real slips, no gimmicks, no false analytics, no stealing stuff from covers.com or anything like that. Real thought breakdown, trends, all of that stuff, you know, I don't know, maybe just brain power, if you will. This community will continue to grow. And, you know, with your help and love and support, we're going to keep marching on. And everything, you know, it has been just met and exceeded all of our expectations so far. So with all that grandiose pomp and circumstance, I'm going to cut to, before we get into our UFC 229 picks, we had a special guest touch base with the Fistful of Cash podcast. He's got some picks for tonight. He's got some great stories. He got some absolute just, you know, behind the scenes look at, you know, what it's like to be a professional athlete, what it's like to be an athlete in the UFC. Just, I can't tell you enough, guys. One of the coolest, most down-to-earth guys I've ever met in my life. And I think you guys are really going to dig this interview. So we're going to go ahead and we're going to cut to this. And then after the interview, we'll go over our UFC 229 picks. So that being said, without any further ado, going to go ahead and cut to the interview with the OG double champ. This guy was flyweight and bantamweight champ in Titan FC, which was absorbed by the UFC, was fighting on Fight Pass, had the flyweight and the bantamweight belt in that organization before anybody else in the UFC was champ. This guy was. All right, guys, here's my interview with Jose Shorty Torres. Enjoy. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I am joined now by the OG champ, the one, the only, Jose Shorty Torres. What's going on, man? How are you?
What's up? I'm great, man. How about yourself?
I'm good, man. It's been a busy day. Dude, I'm so excited for this interview, man. I try to pride myself in being like an MMA aficionado, if you will, and you know, you're somebody that's been on my radar for a long time. And this is just, you know, I promised myself I wasn't going to fanboy out. So this is me not fanboying out. I'm super pumped you're here. I've got a million questions. So if you're game for a million questions, I've got a million to ask.
Come on, I love the question game. Let's shoot.
Okay. So, I mean, one thing that's stood apart, at least in my eyes, and where you put yourself apart from other fighters, is you had this super extensive amateur record when you probably realistically could have gone pro at almost any point. So what was the logic behind staying amateur for so long?
Yeah, there were a few reasons. you know, immediately when I joined my team, Combat Doe, where I'm at Chicago, still a master, Rob Shermer, he stated, hey, man, you know, we've had the likes of Sony Carter here, Terry Martin, and a few other guys, great individuals, but they turned pro very early in their amateur career, and by the time they turned pro, they lost their, you know, first few matches because they were a big fish in a little pond. They maybe went 5-0 as a professional in Chicago, but then, again, it's a big fish in a little pond. You'd never fall anybody in Indiana, never fall anyone in Missouri and other states, even other countries, you know, to see if you were ready to go pro. And so it goes automatically, you're going 20 fights, doesn't matter if you're 20-0, 0-20, you know, 10-10, whatever the numbers are. And from there, you know, we want you to travel as well. Be a big fish in every single pond, not just the one in Chicago. So we ended up doing that, but then I ended up getting a full ride to go to McKinsey University, which was Division II for wrestling and academics. So he's like, dude, you never know what's going to happen, you know, fighting. You might get hurt the next day and not be able to fight anymore. So get a career set, get your education, and we're going to do that first. Doesn't matter if you end up getting 30, 40, 50-plus fights, get your education first. And so I ended up winning the national championships, you know, 2 times in a row, won Worlds, and then, you know, I graduated the same day I won nationals. But if you're going to Worlds, go to Worlds one more time, do something that's different. I ended up being the first ever 2-time world champ. And from there, because of that, because of him, in a sense, holding me back for all good reasons, because I was very prideful with that guy. I want to go pro, my friend, this, that, whatever. He was that father figure, my coach, my mentor, that really sat me down and go, look at you now. You know, you got Tennessee contracts. You got, you know, offers by many people. You had the UFC call you 9 times before you finally got accepted into the UFC, you know. So it was, I got offers from UFC. I got offers from, you know, Bellator. I got offers. Possible offers from 1FC. So it was a crazy thing that finally, you know, everything worked well with Titan, became a double weight class champ, finally got to the UFC, and I'm at where I'm at today.
Yeah, you're reaping the benefits of it now, but, you know, there's countless stories of fighters out there that, you know, they walk into a gym, they're super talented, and people at the gym may not have their best interest at heart, and they get pushed too soon, and, you know, a career gets cut short, be it an injury or, you know, losses that they weren't ready to take or whatever, a myriad of reasons. So, I mean, you know, I'm not telling you anything you don't already know, but man, how fortunate to have a guy that comes in, sees your potential and wants to, you know, move at the speed that allows you to develop both in character and skill. I mean, that's really fortunate and, you know, kind of a rarity. So, I mean, that's, you know, hats off to him. I mean, that's fantastic. So
he was like one of the very first Americans in the cage. By the time his career was dwindling down, MMA was starting to pick up, which, you know, it's been unfortunate for him because, you know, back in the day, I mean, he was, I think, 40 years old when he beat Carlson Gracie Jr., and Carlson Gracie Jr. was about 20 years old at the time. You know, so he was very, very talented. It's just, you know, sadly, he never got to, you know, do is, you know, show the world what he could really do, at least with popularity and all that stuff, because it just wasn't popular, you know, wasn't a mainstream sport yet. But it's all that stuff and seeing what he's been through with Sean Carter, Terry Martin, all these guys coming up, it's nice to know that I have a mentor that's literally been through it all. And, you know, it's a good thing for me, you know, fortunate enough right. that I am decently coachable, that I did listen, and I was like, all right, fine, you know what, I'm young, I'll take your advice. If it doesn't work out well, at least I have, obviously, a few more years to make up for it.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that sticks out to me, especially about the way that you fight, you know, and we'll touch on the 2 weight class champion, but, you know, a fighter in the weight class, you know, I'll just go with UFC. I mean, you're fighting at flyweight right now. You have an incredibly high capacity to finish fights and do so pretty abruptly and quite violently. Where does that finishing instinct and that finishing power come from? Is that something you've trained, or are you just born with, you know, thunder in your hands, or where does that come from?
It's funny because out of my 26 amateur MMA fights, and given I did Muay Thai kickboxing, I rarely finished. I was, in a sense, the GSP, you know, like I would dominate people. I'd hold the guard and do certain things. I'd be the wrestler most of the time, but that was pretty much about it. Even if I was the stand-up fighter in a fight, it was landing ones and twos and just getting out. I mean, I think out of 26 fights, I only had six, or no, not even, I had like 4 TKOs and 1 actual knockout. So, you know, for me, getting these finishes, it's very, very different. But I think something that's really grown into it is I've been traveling and training and getting different perspectives and training with different coaches and really getting the best out of the best and trying to form it into, you know, my own little fighting style. And the best thing about it is that my confidence has risen after every single fight, even after my last loss. It's, I know what I'm able to do with my hands. I'm able to know, you know, I know what I can do on the ground and so many things. So it's honestly just confidence. You know, the first time I dropped someone was in the Czech Republic after I won the Worlds. You know, and it was just like, oh, I could do that. And you know, you start getting a little more confident. Given there's times where I got a little cocky. It's like, all right, maybe next fight I should stop just going right hands or stop just throwing nothing but power. But you know, eventually you start to create a little mold and mold into something special. And so far, you know, it's worked out really well for me, man. And it's, I mean, both with submissions and knockouts, it really is a fun thing, obviously, to do. But I've noticed the less I've tried to get them, the more I've gotten them.
Right. Yeah, and you know, a guy being in your position, being in those weight classes, if you have a high propensity to finish fights and, you know, do so with a little bit of flair and a little bit of style, especially in flyweight, I mean, it's really, you know, it's only a matter of time. I mean, you string together a couple wins against some quality opponents and, you know, you're in the upper echelon, especially now that Mighty Mouse has lost. I mean, how do you feel? I mean, this division is wide open now, right? I mean, how did you take that? I mean, you saw him lose. I mean, first of all, did you think Cejudo won the fight? And, you know, how do you feel moving forward in that division without him reigning supreme at the top?
Yeah, I personally don't think Cejudo won the fight. You know, yeah, he had plenty of takedowns, but, again, there was nothing to be done. You know, for me, I'm a person who wants to make an exciting fight. For Cejudo's side of the fight, it was boring. I mean, you look at DJ, he outlanded him every single round. You know, he just got taken down so big. You're going to get taken down by a gold medalist wrestler, but it's kind of like doing jiu-jitsu, you know, at Naga tournaments, and some wrestler wins the matches just because he beat you by points. It's like, yeah, that's not really fair. This is jiu-jitsu. You know, like, anybody can take you down, but can you tap you out? Can you do this? So, you know, the Cejudo fight, you know, honestly, and this is not being, you know, bashing him, because I believe he is a phenomenal person. You know, good thing for Latinos, you know, he's doing his thing, and he's a champion now. It's awesome. But I honestly think he is going to be a kryptonite for many, many people. Again, look at Sergio Pettis. I thought Sergio Pettis could have knocked him out any time, but because Sergio was so timid because of how high of a caliber Cejudo was at wrestling, you know, you start to panic, you freak out, you worry about the takedown. Even with these high-level jiu-jitsu fighters that Cejudo fought, you know, people get nervous about it, and he's able to hold down such a strong position. You know, I'm not saying he's going to be like GSP, but he might be a dumbed-down version of GSP where he takes a lot of guys down and just holds them down. Yeah, he got the Wilson Hayes knockout, but no offense to Wilson Hayes. He's already way past his prime. He's a guy that's, you know, on his last draw, if he loses one more fight, he's pretty much out. You know, so it's one of those cases that, yeah, he had an awesome knockout against Wilson Hayes, but, I mean, no offense. Again, it's not hard to knock out a guy who's going to stand right in front of you. You know, so, you know, for Cejudo, I think he's going to be champion for a very long time, but I thought the weight class was still much better with Demetrius Johnson, even though he was such a dominant champion in every single form and stuff.
Yeah, I personally scored the fight for Cejudo. I mean, the fact that I had money on it had a little bit to play with that. but, you know, let's put it this way. Going into the fifth round, I had it even. And that, you know, that takedown that you're talking about, or the two takedowns, rather, in that fifth round, I mean, obviously that was what sort of tipped the scales in the judge's eyes there. But I agree with you 100%. DJ 100% outlanded him. You know, what was weird, obviously it was weird to everybody with that fight, was that funky, weird rolled ankle thing at the very beginning. It was just that was one of the more compelling flyweight fights that I think people have paid attention to in a long time. Short of your last fight, you know, when you stepped up to take that fight, you know, there was a buzz. I mean, I'm sure you heard it. I mean, obviously, you were in the fight, so of course. But I mean, that was a big fight amongst two, you know, I guess you'd say top prospects in the flyweight division. You know, what was your logic on taking a fight? I mean, because you took that on short notice, am I right?
Yeah, you know, I took it on a 20-day notice, which is, you know, it honestly was two factors for it. You know, it was pride because, you know, my first fight in UFC was a 9-day notice. I fought Jared Brooks. You know, technically there was the, Jared Brooks knocked himself out, and whatever the case may be, my hype train got derailed a little bit. It got thumbed down a little bit. I didn't like that. You know, I was like, okay, you know, I want to put on a full performance. And then I found that I wasn't going to fight until maybe October, November. And then the next day they call me and they go, or excuse me, a couple days later they call me and they go, hey, you want to fight August 4th? I go, man, I've denied the UFC so many times. I've been dying to get back in. There might not be as, you know, late as I wanted it to be to get a full training camp, but just 20 days, I know I can make the way. I made it in 9 days, you know, for this first fight. And I really want to show the fans what I can do. And, you know, sadly, it just, it wasn't the thing I should have done. You know, right. Given Alex Perez performed an amazing game plan, and he did hurt me multiple times in that fight. I think he did a phenomenal job. But the fact was, I lost at my worst. I had, you know, 2 weight cuts in 2 months. I had 26 pounds and 28 pounds, almost, what is that, like 52, 53 pounds, you know. So that, as a flyweight fighter, it killed me. And yeah. Honestly, you know, and then sadly, I'm using it as like my little excuse, my little crutch, but I just wasn't there mentally. And, you know, it's crazy because even during the fight, you know, I love the clinch. I love the Mexican style boxing, which I was so excited by Alex Perez because of that style. I got in there, and, you know, once he hit me a couple times, I'm like, all right, come on, let's do this. No, we're just going to take all the shots. Okay. All right. A knee's coming, block it. Now we're just going to run into that dude. Okay. You're like, my body just wasn't wanted to do anything. My mind was there, but nothing followed. So by the time the fight ended, I knew it was an exciting fight, but I knew nothing about it. I didn't know I took 107 shots. I feel like I hit a lot, but I didn't know I took 107 shots. I didn't even know the fight was over. I was like, oh, cool. Round's over. All right, cool. All right, cool. Obviously, I'm just going to try to redeem myself second round. I'm like, oh, the fight's over. Oh, all right. You know, and
right.
It's bad because I was so mentally out of it that even that week, my team wanted me to call out. They wanted me to back out of the fight, which I'm just too prideful. You know, I'm very extrinsically motivated. I want to entertain the fans. My family was already there, and all these things that just weren't playing in my favor. I should have listened to my team and said, you know, hey, man, I just can't fight. I'm not feeling well. You know, whatever the case may be, because I really wasn't. But I ended up taking the fight, and, you know, my body and everything just didn't show up, and I got beat up for it.
Well, that's what I wanted to, you know, first of all, I think taking the fight on short notice like you did, anytime a guy steps up and takes a fight on short notice, you know, I'd have to look at the trends, but I think it's like 45% of the time the short notice fighter loses. So anytime a fighter shows up and takes a fight on short notice, I mean, you're already sort of, from a statistical standpoint, you know, walking in almost with a hand tied behind your back. And then, you know, Alex Perez had a full camp to get ready, regardless of who was going to be across from him. And then, like you were saying with the weight cut, I mean, you're a guy that, you know, can fight and be successful at bantamweight as well as flyweight. You know, is flyweight your home in the UFC? Or are you going to try to float between the two? I mean, what are you thinking?
You know, flyweight is definitely my home, and that's something I'm trying to, you know, really signify now. Is that the bad thing is I'm a flyweight fighter. I knew I was going to get signed last minute. I had multiple calls for just last minute fight. They were never calling me for a contract. And even now, I go, hey, you know, Mick, can I get a fight? May I get a 2 month training camp? They go, oh, we'll figure it out. Maybe you already fought 2 times in, you know, 2 months. We're trying to obviously recycle the guys through. You're all the way in the back of the bench, and you'll slowly make your way up. Which, hey, that's fine. You know, everyone deserves their turn. But I don't want to take a last minute fight. I want a full month training camp. You know, full 2 month training camp is not 12 weeks to show the world what I can do, what I did in Titan. I know I can do it in the UFC. I just obviously have to have that full training camp to prove it. But my big thing right now is my weight. You know, I weigh 155 naturally.
Right.
Even though I'm only 5'4", I'm a heavy flyweight. You know, I'm just naturally thick. I got those Mexican genetics. I eat one tortilla. Everything just, you know, closed up. So, you know, for me, I'm still trying to figure out the science of how to manage my weight and create a different lifestyle instead of, you know, creating a training camp, working extremely hard to get this weight down, and then by the time I get to the fight, you know, the same thing happens in my last one. I'm just not mentally there. You know, for me, mainly in wrestling, I do have PTSD with wrestling back in college because there's a huge long story of my weight cuts and stuff like that, but I was more, let me rephrase that, I was 100% focused on making weight because that's how hard the weight cuts were for me. I didn't have a nutritionist like I have now. So it was 100% focusing on the weight. By the time wrestling came, I was like, oh, yeah, damn, I got to wrestle. I forgot about that. And I just didn't care about the match. I was like, you know what? I'm not going to get pinned. I'm going to save you 3 points, but that's all I can do. Sorry, guys. You know, like, I was just that upset because of the weight cut. Just, you know, and people who do MMA and wrestling, all that stuff, who, you know, end up doing all these extreme weight losses, it does mentally mess you up. You just don't want to do it anymore. You're like, why am I even doing this? I hate the sport. You know?
Right.
So it's for me, I'm 100% right now trying to focus on my weight. You know, I'm in Colorado. I'm in Denver, Colorado right now, training with Team Elevations, Wayne Ludwig, Trevor Whitman, and doing so many things to, you know, really prepare myself for, you know, the next possible fight. And I'm really obviously trying to prove a point again. I'm trying to bring that hype train, you know, put it back on the tracks and just keep on pushing forward.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I saw your post on Instagram with you and Gaethje standing there, and, you know, I understand training room, you know, what happens there stays there, but I mean, obviously if you two are sparring, I mean, is that guy's power as real as he made it look on James Vick? I mean, cause that, my man melted James Vick, and you standing in there banging with Justin Gaethje. I mean, that should put, you know, those that follow you on social media, should stand at attention and realize what it's going to take. If you're willing to stand with that guy and go to war, what it's going to take, you know, it, whenever they're standing across the octagon from you. I mean, hats off to you. That guy's a bona fide killer.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the fun thing about Justin Gaethje is, and as I did say in my post-fight interview after my first fight, is I am a small Justin Gaethje flyweight division. I mean, his, you know, our style is literally to walk forward. We're counter fighters who push forward. And then when we see the start to break, that's when we go in and attack and do our thing. And that's where we, you know, thrive best is later on in the fight. But, you know, we take a lot more shots than possibly we should. But, I mean, you've seen both of us fight. We take plenty of shots, and we can take them and give them definitely back. But, you know, in sparring, you know, he's a lot bigger than me. He knows, obviously, to take a little easier on me with the punches and combinations, but or at least the power of it. But he was, you know, he was cracking me a couple, and I was like, man, I can just imagine how hard this guy hit going 100%. He's probably hitting me, if I'm lucky, 70%, you know, at most.
Right.
But him and I were going back and forth, which is hilarious because people start to film it.
Oh, jeez.
Like, dude, this is just like a phone booth type of fight. It literally looked like we were just on one line. One guy would walk back getting hit, and then 5 seconds later, after the combination was over, the other guy was walking back attacking. And it literally just kept going back and forth, like, you know, tug of rope. It was just pretty much just back and forth battle. And obviously, it was a fun thing for me because my big thing is I need to work on movement. When I have somebody who can mimic my stuff, not even do it better than me because he's much bigger than I am, I have no choice but to move and change my style a little bit, adapt more speed. So it changed a lot of things for me. And then for him, he's a bigger guy. You know, yeah, he has the power, but I have to implement the speed. So he has to catch up to me and, you know, make his timing that much better to catch around a couple shots.
Have you officially moved camp out there now? I mean, are you going to be training like almost full time at Team Elevation, or how's that working? Are you just out there just to, you know, get some rounds in and learn, or how's that working out?
You know, for me, I'm a guy that loves to gym hop. You know, I just came from ATT. I'm back at Team Elevation, which I was here sometime last year with TJ before he moved to the training lab in Anaheim, California. You know, I'm a guy that loves to gym hop and get different experiences and go with so many different guys because, again, I'm not prideful. I mean, I sparred with Sergio Pettis before. You know, me and him used to go rounds over rounds over rounds, and that's it. You know, there's no animosity. We go, oh, cool, we'll fight each other one day. That's cool. Pay his heads off. Whoever wins, you know, buys drinks or buys food after. It doesn't, you know, we don't. For me, I don't care. A lot of guys are very prideful and don't want to even spar each other because they don't want to give out hints or whatever the case may be. But for me, I love the gym hop. I love to get the best out of these coaches and mold the shorty, you know, that's going to be the best that he can be. You know, so I'm trying to do what I can do to the best of my ability. But, you know, we'll see what happens. For me, I'm here. I know I want to go back to ATT. They just have so many bodies. I mean, the amount of bodies American Top Team has is ridiculous. At every single weight class, which is extremely hard to find for both heavyweights and flyweights. And me being a flyweight, it's like, you know, the holy grail for, you know, for sparring partners. So I definitely want to go back there, you know, for my next camp. But, you know, for me, I am, you know, going around and I do want to split camps and, you know, just figure it out. You know, right now it's a learning process to get back to. If I'm not going to fight until early next year, that could be January, February, March, or even April. So I have plenty of time to find my craft and really show the world that, you know, it doesn't matter what team I go to, the best shorty's going to come out.
I can dig that 100%. All right, now, you said something about Sergio Pettis, and of course, this is a betting podcast, so I've got to touch on some of this stuff. First and foremost, I want to ask, do fighters pay any attention to betting lines or whether or not they're favorites or underdogs going into fights?
I mean, it's funny because when I first started, you know, obviously because I was fighting guys around my level, still pro debut, and then the next fight was 15 pro fights and so on, I started off nearly as a favorite. And then, you know, people would tell me, like, oh, dude, you're a favorite for the fight. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's different. I'm never used as a favorite, but cool. And then as I started to get later in my career, I was the underdog, but then I became the dominant champion. And even going to the UFC, I think my first fight with Jared, I was the favorite, which was hilarious. Because again, 9-day notice, like, oh, you're immediately favorite. We don't care if you have 26 pounds to cut. You're the favorite. You're going to win. So, and the last fight, I was the underdog. For me, I try my best not to pay attention to it. I mean, regardless of the fact I'm actually making a YouTube video about it today, I love being the underdog. There's a no-lose scenario being the underdog. Compared to being the favorite, you know, if you're the favorite, people expect you to win, but what happens when you lose? Compared to if you're the underdog and you lose, who cares? People expect it anyways. You gave it your all, you tried your best, and hopefully you got more fans because of it. But if you won, it's a huge spectacle. It's kind of like wearing pajamas every single day to work, but I don't know, or one day you wear jeans, you were like, you going on a date? Are you going out? Dude,
right.
You're looking good. You know, it's different. So, that was actually me in college. But, you know, for me, it's I try my best not to focus on that, because regardless of the fact, no matter what, something can always happen in there, whether I'm the favorite or underdog. But when it comes to and I feel like you're slowly getting into this, the Sergio Pettis Josir Formiga fight.
That's it.
That fight is an extremely, extremely close fight. I think that whole card is pretty much kickboxers versus grapplers, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at Tony Ferguson Pettis, you look at Conor Khabib, you look at, you know, Sergio Pettis Formiga, and I think the list goes on and on. But for me, I'm going to go on the side of the grapplers just because you look at, and I love Sergio Pettis' death, but Josir Formiga is also a teammate. So I'm biased at both. When I look at it from an analytical point of view, Josir Formiga has knocked out Power. He did knock out or drop Ben Wynn last one and was able to tap him out like that, no problem. And I've rolled with Josir Formiga. That guy is a leech. Once he has you down, it's almost impossible to get up. And you finally do get up, you're extremely tired. But Sergio Pettis does have I wouldn't say he has knockout power. He does have the combination. He does have the movement. But you look at his last fight with Cejudo, he was extremely timid because he was facing that good of a wrestler. You didn't see the fight before that. You didn't see the usual Sergio Pettis open up. But then you look at the Benavidez fight. Yeah, he was able to crack Benavidez a couple times and do his thing. But that fight was so close because Benavidez was the wrestler, the grappler, stuff like that. I think Josir Formiga is easily one of the best Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu grapplers in the flyweight division. And I know that from experience. That guy is ridiculous. I can see him winning this fight by you know, any type of submission, because Formiga is just that. I mean, his takedown game it is ridiculous. I have no clue how he takes it down. It actually makes me really, really mad. But he does the thing. I'm going to give it for Formiga, but you know, Sergio Pettis, again, he's not even in his prime yet. You know, just like myself, we're both young athletes. We're still getting to that. So he's a growing, you know, he's a growing athlete. And regardless of who wins or loses this fight, people are going to want to see him fight again.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm actually going with Formiga on this fight. And that's mostly because I'm picking Anthony Pettis to win against Tony Ferguson. And normally, when the Pettis brothers fight on the same card, it's either one win, one lose, or both lose. So if I'm picking one to win, I got to pick the other one to lose, is sort of the way, sort of my logic behind it. Not that that's the most scientific breakdown the world's ever heard, but, you know, I think that Formiga's slept on, you know, amongst casual fans as being a real contender at flyweight. You know, it makes my heart, you know, smile a little bit hearing you say that you think he's got a good chance at this fight, because that's exactly who I'm rolling with as far as my pick goes for that fight. I don't want to put you in a tough spot, you know, and you hate to talk about another man's job here, but Conor Khabib, care, don't care, keys to victory, anything like that you want to touch on?
You know, it's a fight everyone wants to watch. I love Khabib to death, and I say that only because he was part of my team when I turned pro Cage KMMA, which was a team in the Kingdom of Bahrain in the Middle East, and Khabib was one of the main reasons I got my Dynasty contract. We did this big practice. Not many people know about this. We did this big practice, and I was rolling with Islam Makhachev, and, you know, I'm the base barn and doing all these things, and Khabib just wanted to keep on rolling. I was like, yeah, sure, I don't care. I'll go with you, and him and I were going back and forth, having a lot of fun, given he's being nice to me because he is so much bigger, and we're having a lot of fun, and the Lexus Man, the COO of Titan FC, was like, who the hell is this kid? Like, and then he, you know, looked me up, and I was able to spar against Alex Soto, UFC veteran, and I did really well. He's like, "Do you want a full fight contract?" You know, so Khabib was one of the reasons why I got signed, but just training with him personally, given I've never trained with Conor McGregor, but Khabib, once he gets you down, that's it. I mean, it is extremely hard to get up, and I mean, we've seen from Barboza, we've seen from Michael Johnson, and so many guys, once you're down, you're getting mauled. Whether you make it to the next round or not, you're getting demasculated. So it's the fact of now you're facing Conor McGregor, who knows how to move, who knows how to, you know, immediately get up when he's taken down. The only problem is, can you take his shots and keep pushing him to a different pace to where now he's getting exhausted after the second, after the third, because Conor McGregor is known for having somewhat of a conditioning problem, mainly compared to Khabib, that literally worked and worked and worked in all five rounds, and talking to Dana White while he's beating you up.
Right.
So it's the fact, can Khabib take a shot without getting punched that many times or without getting hit that clean? And if he does take a shot in the face, can he take it and still keep pushing forward? I think Conor McGregor does have the upper hand in this one because he's such a dominant stand-up fighter. And again, he is smooth. He knows how to move. He knows how to fake and make you flinch and do so many things. But, man, Khabib's just a whole different animal. And I'm 100% going with Khabib on this one, given I am a little biased. But even the mental warfare, I don't think it's affecting Khabib at all.
No, I don't think so either.
You look at Khabib's upbringing. Like, he grew up in a military upbringing. He grew up, you know, around some really terrible people, you know. So he's mentally, he is strong as hell. You know, so I don't see Khabib breaking whatsoever mentally, whatever the case may be. But, you know, Conor does have a you know, like anyone, a knockout chance. But Khabib's never been knocked out. He's been, you know, days. I think he's been dropped a couple times, but he's never been knocked out. Can Conor do that? That's what I'm excited to see this Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, what makes me nervous about this fight is the first 3 minutes, because in the first 3 minutes of the Michael Johnson fight, Khabib was, he was like a little bit successful with the stand-up, but not too successful, and Johnson was landing a little bit. I think that Conor's timing and accuracy is a lot better than Michael Johnson's, and I'm afraid that in that first 3 minutes, that's when Khabib's going to be at his most vulnerable, is that first initial, can I get close enough to you to lock you up? Because I'm with you. I agree that once Khabib gets him down, that's general public consensus, is that if Khabib gets you down, it's over with. But Conor's got such great he's got such great spatial awareness and timing. And, you know, besides having an absolute cannon in his left hand, I think that the fact that his accuracy is so on point, I mean, it's almost like vintage Anderson Silva. He hits you exactly where he needs to make that light switch turn off. And, you know, that the combination that sticks out with me with Conor is the one that he finished Eddie Alvarez with. I mean, Eddie Alvarez was falling down and was continuing to get pieced up as he was falling. You know, the reaction time that takes from somebody to hit somebody like that as they're falling, you know, that was, it's just, it's uncanny. And I think that Conor's at his most dangerous maybe the first 2.5-3 minutes. If Khabib can get past that, I think he's got a clear path to victory. But that first 3 minutes, man, that makes me really nervous.
Yeah, and honestly, you know, I've gone with Khabib, and then it was funny, a nice little inside story was I was going with Khabib, he got the top crucifix because I couldn't escape. And for 3 minutes, while getting my head punched, you know, from the ground to his mitt, from the ground to his mitt, back and forth, I'm like turning, looking to the box, and I'm going, damn, there's 3 minutes left. Khabib, come on, man, just let me out. Let's practice, please. And so I struggled, you know, for the rest of the round. I just got beat up, and by the time the round was over, I was exhausted. You know, he took me down, I think, after the first 2 minutes, and after that 3 minutes, I was just down. And I 100% couldn't get up. I was hoping to do some space, but I couldn't. Then, you know, I took the break, and Alex Soto goes in there, and immediately, same thing happens. He's getting, you know, taken down. He's getting beat up, top crucifix. I look at Pete Williams, who was the coach at the time, and I go, did I look like that? He goes, no, this is so much worse. I go, oh, my God. Like, you know, because Alex Soto was a little bigger, so he's like, oh, I get to go a little harder on him.
Right.
And I was like, man, this is way before Michael Johnson and all that stuff. So I was like, man, I can just imagine what he's going to do to, like, some of these guys in UFC. And, I mean, seeing what he does now, I mean, mainly when he went against Barboza, I was like, somebody please throw in the towel, because it's just not going to stop. Like, Barboza's tough as heck, but it's not beneficial, you know? So
yeah, he wasn't learning anything getting punched in the face that much. They could have easily stopped that fight at any time. I mean, nobody was, you know, in doubt as to how that fight was going to go. There was no last-minute Hail Mary kick going to stop that beatdown.
Yeah, and I mean, again, Khabib can take a shot, taking a shot. Michael Johnson taking a spinning back heel kick from Barboza, give it that in and land completely flush, but it still landed. You know, so it's he's taking some ultimately phenomenal shots and still pushed forward. Can Conor knock him out? That's going to be the ultimate question, the thing that everyone's going to be wondering on Saturday. But I 100% Khabib is going to win this fight. Mainly, if, you know, my game plan would be, you know, ankle shot. You know, just keep on shooting to the ankle. Take out his hands. Take out his, you know, wide kicks. Just do what you did against Ally Quinto. Just shoot to the ankle. Take him down. Shoot the ankle. Take him down. Shoot the ankle. Take him down. And take away his dominant stand-up. But, you know, we'll see what happens. I'm not going to be.
I like – you know what? I've been on the fence, but I feel like you're pushing me in the right direction here. So I want to be, I want to be respectful of your time. So I got two questions for you. Last question is, like I said, from a betting standpoint, if somebody's going to bet a Shorty Torres fight, should they bet decision, knockout, submission?
That's a hard one. You know, I haven't gone to decision in a while. And the last time I went decision, I believe, was when I won the 35-pound championship. And I ended up having a broken hand and torn MCL in the first round. So I gave myself a little bit of an excuse for that one.
Right.
But it was, and I ended up dominating the rest of the fight. For me, I'm going to have to go a knockout, man. I'm one of those Mexican-style fighters that love to push forward. I always say I'm a Mexican-style, you know, fighter that likes to push forward, but I have the Puerto Rican style that go with it, you know? So for me, I want to knock people out. The flyweight division needs excitement, and I believe I'm there to bring that. That's why I was so, you know, enthusiastic about getting signed to the UFC. So I'm like, guys, I know I can bring this. Come on, sign me. And with Demetrius Johnson as a champion, because he's so dominant, it makes the division look boring, you know? So, you know, for me, dude, I have to tell everyone, if they are going to bet on me, you have to bet knockout. I can't say what round. I'm obviously going for the first, if possible, you know, for longevity of my career. But, you know, for me, I go in there having fun. And if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, I'm hoping that you still enjoyed the show and it's a spectacle. Like, for example, my last fight, whether or not I won, Lawless wasn't mentally there, whatever the case may be, people enjoyed the fight. And now they know a little bit more about both Alex Perez and myself. So I'm excited to just get back in there and, you know, see what happens next.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. So you said it before, but I just wanted to confirm, you don't have another fight scheduled as of right now, correct?
Besides fighting myself and life every day, I do not have another fight
scheduled. Okay. All right. Fair enough. All right, last question. This is it. Anybody that wants to get in touch with you as far as, you know, social media, anything, any causes you're supporting, anything like that, what's the best way to follow along with what you're doing?
Yeah, so there are a couple of things right now. Instagram, Jose Shorty Torres. Twitter, Shorty Torres 125. Facebook, Jose Shorty Torres. The quotations around Shorty. That's my fan page. Also, TeamShorty.com. You can email me through there or Instagram as well. And TeamShorty.com, 20% out of all the earnings out of my website goes to the kids in my gym so they can travel, train, compete. And I do little fellowship stuff at my school. If, you know, kids want to go to wrestling tournaments, I'm not going to be able to, you know, tell them no. They have to do little jobs for me, you know, work for the community, and then there you go. You have money, go to your wrestling tournament in Iowa. Do this, do that. So, you know, I'm trying to do different things. Eventually, I want to, you know, create my own, you know, small nonprofit, you know, organization to help, you know, the kids in my neighborhood, just like Brian Ortega's doing, Alina McFarlane, and so many people. I just don't have the name for the popularity extremely yet, but soon enough. But right now, actually, the big thing is Curtis Blades and I, because Curtis is doing his, a main event in Beijing, China, and I'm also in the UFC as well. We're, you know, two, in a sense, shorties coming out of the Chicagoland neighborhood. We actually made a collaborative t-shirt together, which are on both of our Instagrams right now. Only 100 are being made. They're all pre-ordered, so you can pick whatever size you want to get. And once they're gone, they're gone. So I'm just excited to do something like that. It's definitely a blast.
Awesome. Listen, I appreciate your time. I know I've, you know, been overly appreciative via text message and everything else, man, but I really do enjoy you as a fighter, getting to know you, talking to you. I mean, it's hard to root against you as a person either, man. I mean, I'm so pumped you're in the UFC finally. I've been following you forever. You know, like I said, fanboy out here for a second, super pumped that you're in the UFC and super grateful you took the time to be on the show.
I appreciate it, man. Anytime. And actually, one of the biggest things I'm doing right now, and something I do want to shout out, I forgot to shout out earlier, was I have my own YouTube series called Inside Team Shorty. The link is usually in my bio on Instagram. And what I do so far, I've had 5 episodes out. I really try my best to talk about the mental game. You know, stuff behind the scenes, the truth, the reality behind the scenes of everything MMA. People that just don't see everyone. Like, for example, my first video was the truth about MMA. Everyone wants to be a Conor McGregor. They want to do MMA and believe they're going to be a Conor McGregor. And that's, I mean, that's awesome. I never said you can't be, but do you know where he started? Do you know where, you know, what it took him to get up there? And I give different examples of different fighters, you know, with the struggle of coming up, and then examples of myself and what it should have put up opportunities. So, you know, if people want to follow Inside Team Shorty, subscribe, like, and I really appreciate all the love and support.
Awesome. Well, hey, man, this has been, like I said, this has been fantastic, and we'll talk soon.
For sure, man. I can't wait.
All right. Thanks. All right, guys. Hope you enjoyed that interview with Jose Shorty Torres. Like I said, we had a good time. He did call in. If the audio is a little wonky there on some parts, hopefully you're able to switch to headphones, or, you know, we're able to adjust accordingly. We did the best we could with the audio that we had. So hopefully you guys got to enjoy that. That being said, you had his picks for the fights coming up, what will be Saturday night. So, you know, we want to take this opportunity and just sort of dive into that. And, you know, Soup, if you're all right, I'm just going to start rattling these off, and we'll do a little back and forth here. See what you think, what you like, what you don't like. Yeah. All right. So I'm not sure how you feel about the Michelle Waterson Felice Herrig fight, but with that being on the main card, I want to touch on that real quick. I'm a big Michelle Waterson fan. I like her a lot, but Felice Herrig is the type of fighter that gives her fits. She's pressure. She's wrestle heavy. And Felice Herrig's looked really good lately. You know, she seems to be a fighter that struggles a lot of times with the mental aspect of the game, which then affects her physical aspect. But she at least appears in the last couple fights to have really gotten that under control. And, you know, Waterson's, you know, back and forth. She's got her own gym set up now that she's training at. She's going to back and forth from Jackson Wink. She's got her own thing going on. Usually fighters that are in this transition, this training transition where they're trying something completely new, I tend to stay away from, because it can only be one of two things. Either it's the best thing that ever happened to them, or it's the worst thing. And it's just not worth taking the risk. So I like Felice Herrig in this fight. She's coming in as the favorite. She's coming in only though at a minus 120. You know, Michelle Waterson, you know, coming back at her at plus 100. So it's not that big of a, I guess you would say, it's not that big of a difference as far as Vegas is concerned. What is striking though about this is the over under 2.5 in the round department. The over 2.5, so going basically essentially going to decision, they have it at minus 490, where the under is coming in at plus 365. Michelle Waterson has been finished before. Same thing with Felice Herrig. This fight could actually get stopped. You know, Michelle Waterson has known to, you know, have bloody noses. You know, this is not meant to be sexist. A lot of times in a female fight, when there's a lot of blood, a referee is more inclined to step in and stop it sooner for whatever reason. But Michelle Waterson has been finished before. She's been finished by wrestle heavy fighters. I like Felice Herrig in this fight. Any thoughts?
So here's my question. Do you think, I know that, you know, Waterson's undersized here. Do you think that Waterson can get Herrig on the ground, on the mat, and exploit her ground skills?
Maybe. You know, it's not to take anything away from Michelle Waterson. I mean, she's a world champion in other organizations. And this fight's at 125 pounds, which I think is the best weight class for both of these women. You know, I guess whatever logic you want to use here, you know, my heart says Waterson, my head says Herrig. Herrig's the type of fighter that gives Michelle Waterson fits. If she can't keep her distance, she can't utilize kicks, she can't get, you know, she can't clinch and fight dirty, I don't see where she wins this fight. I see, you know, they call Felice Herrig the bulldog for a reason. She's just going to wrap her up and try to take her down and just GSP style grind her out. I just don't see, you know, I see how Michelle Waterson wins. She keeps the fight standing and, you know, she uses her jab, she uses her range, she uses her kicks, and she, you know, pieces up Herrig, frustrates her, and then eventually catches her. That's how she wins the fight. But with the form that Felice Herrig has shown as of late, I just don't see it happening. So, and I think Vegas, you know, sort of sees the same thing. That's why they're giving her the nod as the favorite here.
Okay. All right.
So, but after that, I mean, we literally go from opposite ends of the spectrum. So you go from 125-pound women to 265-pound men. You got Derek the Black Beast Lewis against Alexander Volkov. You got anything for this one?
I mean, I think I know where you're going to go with this one based off, I know, your personal opinion between these two fighters. Go ahead. I'll see where you go, and then I'll give you a counterpoint if you go where I think you are.
I'll tell you right now, Derek Lewis did not train for a 3-round fight. He did not train for a 3-round fight. He does not want a 3-round fight. After the Francis Ngannou fight, he's going to come out and he's going to try to reestablish himself as the Black Beast. And in doing that, he's going to come out hyper aggressive. I don't see this fight going past 2 rounds, or 2.5 rounds rather. Let me rephrase that. This fight will hit the under of the 2.5. That's coming in at -125. I like that play. I like that play in the sense that either Lewis will gas himself unsuccessfully, or he's going to snuff out Volkov real quick. Volkov can be hit, but he is long. He's rangy. He's got that sinewy, you know, just it looks like a guy that every, you know, his elbows are sharp. He just doesn't, like, I don't know. He's like a Grim Reaper, if you will. This Ivan Drago looking, I don't know. He's just, he creeps me out, but he's also a very talented fighter, and he comes out there, and if he can use that jab and frustrate Lewis, the one thing about Derek Lewis is Derek Lewis is a lot like Cowboy Cerrone in the sense that if you can frustrate him early, he'll shut it down. He'll put that thing on autopilot at 35 miles an hour and just wait for everything to be done. So Volkov can go out there and frustrate him. I absolutely think that he can get Derek Lewis out of there just basically from, you know, a mental submission, if you will, because I don't think that Lewis has the fortitude to keep that thing moving forward if he gets frustrated. That being said, Derek Lewis did not train for 3 rounds for this fight. I think he's going to come out there. He's going to look, as long as his back, again with the back issues with Derek Lewis, as long as his back holds up and he's not, you know, hiding a back injury like he was with the Ngannou fight, I think that he's going to come out there. He's going to just a whirling black dervish and get Volkov out of there in under 2.5 rounds. So I like the under 2.5, and I like Derek Lewis coming in as the underdog at +145.
So what's, I mean, if you you make one play on this, are you going Derek Lewis, or are you going under 2.5?
I'm going under 2.5.
My pick was Alexander Volkov by knockout under 2.5. So under 2.5 is our play. I thought you were going to go with Derek Lewis, and then I was going to ask you, you know, Derek Lewis's big advantages in most of his fights are his height, his power, and his reach. And I think that he might be bettered in at least two of those three, if not all three, by Volkov. The power is, you know, in the eye of the beholder, but definitely height and reach. Volkov has him there. I agree with you in the under 2.5. I think Derek Lewis has a point to prove after that just piss poor performance that him and Ngannou put on. So yeah, I think he comes out, like you said, like guns blazing. He's either going to catch Volkov and put him to sleep, or he's going to be so out of control and wild trying to put on a performance that Volkov is going to use his reach and slip one in and drop the Black Beast, like the 285 pounds that he really is.
Yeah, here's two points to make on that. One, I think Derek Lewis hasn't beat in raw power, but I think that Volkov, as far as technical power that translates through accuracy, he has Derek Lewis beat. Now, if I've got a burning car on top of me, I want Derek Lewis to try to pick it up before I want Alexander Volkov yeah. to try to pick it up. If I'm laying on the ground semi-unconscious, I don't want Derek Lewis punching me in the face. I want Alexander Volkov punching me in the face. But if we're standing there at distance and I'm actively and engagingly fighting back, I don't want Alexander Volkov across from me, because he's going to fire straight punches down the line and hit you exactly where he needs to hit you to inflict the most damage. Don't forget, and this is my second point here, is that Volkov is super sneaky good on the ground. Really good. It would not surprise me if he's able to, you know, get a leg sweep, a little inside leg sweep, or even go for like a high single, dump Derek Lewis on the ground, get his back and choke him out. All the same, I think that's going to happen in under 2.5 rounds, and that's why that's my play for this fight.
Okay.
All right. Next fight we got is a light heavyweight matchup between Dominic Reyes and OSP, Ovin St. Preux. Sorry, that was really mean. I like Reyes in this fight. He's got a lot of hype behind him. You know, he doesn't have necessarily the UFC's hype machine behind him, but Dom Reyes is no joke, and he's actually a pretty heavy favorite in this fight, coming in at -235. And I like him in this fight. Obviously, with OSP, you got to worry about, he does have one punch knockout power, and he does love throwing that left high kick. I mean, he has slept many a dude in the UFC with that left high kick. But he has cardio issues. His boxing is not good, and Dominic Reyes excels at both of those. He's got crisp hands. He's got good lungs. The line coming in at this one is Reyes -235, OSP coming back at +190. Over under on 1.5 rounds, the under 1.5 coming in at -160. So Vegas is expecting these big boys to get out of there early. I agree with that play, but my play for this fight is just Dom Reyes, however he can get it, at -235.
So you don't think there's any chance that we're going to see another OSP Von Flu choke?
No, I think the Von St. Preux is done. I think Reyes is going to piece this dude up. That's what I'm anticipating anyway. So I think he's a heavy favorite for a reason.
Yeah, I'm with you on this one. So, I think OSP goes down. I think his age and his cardio really play a factor in this one. So yeah, I'm with you on Dom Reyes.
Yeah, there's that, and I think that we've seen the best out of OSP that we're gonna see. I don't see him using like you alluded to with his age. I don't think this is going to be the, you know, whatever the tipping point fight that where he starts to go and makes the push for a title bid. Even though light heavyweight is really shallow or just maybe waist deep right now, there's not a whole lot. There's kind of the waters are muddled at every division that Daniel Cormier steps into. So I think that Reyes is going to get the W here. So that brings us to, this is where things start to get weird, man. This is where things are going to get real weird. Tony Ferguson, Anthony Pettis. I'm going to go ahead and side with Shorty Torres and with the Formiga pick. And, you know, he's obviously fighting Sergio, and, you know, you heard Jose say he has sparred and, you know, had battles with both of these guys, and firsthand knowledge thinks that Formiga is going to get that win. So I like that pick. But that being said, if one Pettis loses, the other one has to win. Is the way it is when these Pettis brothers, I don't know why they always put them on the same card together. I mean, they save money on airfare. I don't know what the deal is, but they always fight on the same card. And if one loses, the other one wins. And if Sergio Pettis loses to Juicier Formiga, Anthony Pettis is going to win. Now, that being said, Tony Ferguson, 11 fight win streak, interimish lightweight champ, I guess. And he's also a huge favorite in this fight, coming in at minus 355 for Ferguson. Even though he's been off for a year and he's coming back off a devastating knee injury, they've got him at a minus 355. But I still like Pettis. I still like Pettis in this fight. Pettis is coming in at plus 285. You know, before I go into why I like Pettis, what do you think about this fight?
No, I told you earlier in the week, I rode with Anthony Pettis when he fought. Oh my goodness, what's that clown's name? Michael Chiesa. Sorry, drew blank. I was just thinking of long curly hair and terrible tattoos. I rode with Anthony Pettis in that. I know that, you know, in his last eight fights, he's like 5-3, ever since he relinquished the title. And he doesn't have the speed and the prowess that he, you know, that his fighting once embodied. But I think the value here is in Anthony Pettis. Like you said, Ferg's coming off a year off, coming back from a really nasty knee injury. And when you've got a guy at this kind of value with this kind of pedigree who has shown what he's capable of in the octagon, I think that it's hard not to go with Anthony Pettis here.
Yeah, I'm with you. And you said the key word there, value. Coming in at plus 285, he's got a real chance of winning this fight at plus 285. And there's, you know, this fight will go two different – it can go two different ways, right? One is Ferguson continues to fight like Anthony Pettis' kryptonite. He pressures him. He gets him up against the cage. He dirty boxes him. He drags him down. He chokes him out. Which Tony Ferguson, black belt under Eddie Bravo, 10th Planet Jiu-Jitsu, can absolutely do those things. The other option is that Tony Ferguson comes back out and he holds his hands low like he always does. And he does that thing where he wants to engage in some weird brawl where he leads face first. And Anthony Pettis pieces him the hell up, rattles him, gets him down on the ground and chokes him out. Or just snuffs him out altogether. And, you know, let's not forget that leg injury. That will be the leg that Tony Ferguson is walking forward with that is going to be on Pettis' strong side. And that was an outside ligament injury. So when Pettis starts bringing that shin across that leg, it's going to be right in the honey hole, right in the sweet spot where Ferguson got hurt. So, you know, how many of those booming leg kicks that Anthony Pettis throws from time to time is Tony Ferguson going to be willing to eat before he decides he needs to abandon whatever game plan he may have and try to figure something else out? My bet is that it's going to happen in, you know, probably midway through the first round. You know, the over under on 2.5 rounds for this fight, the over is at minus 120. I don't know why they think this fight is going to decision. That really doesn't make that much sense to me. These guys both have too high of a propensity for finishing fights for that to be a play for me. The under 2.5 is coming in at plus 100. That's a great value. And Pettis at plus 285 is also a great value. You know, to make money, I like Pettis. To make safe money, I like the under.
Okay. So now you've talked yourself through it. You've gone through your explanation. Which one are you putting the microphone stamp on? Are we going?
I'm stamping Anthony Pettis.
Okay.
Yep. 285. That's the stamp. That's the slip you will see on the Instagram page. That's the stamp.
Okay. Sorry for my sigh there.
All right.
Gronk just dropped the ball and it popped straight up in the air and the Colts picked it off at the 5-yard line. So sorry.
Okay. All right. Let's rifle through these last ones real quick. Connor Khabib. So this is the moment, you know, we've all been waiting for, the moment of truth, reckoning, however you want to call it, is here. After the most recent press conference that Khabib left early because Connor showed up late, Connor is now only a plus 130.
Yeah. I mean,
Khabib's God, coming
people
back
were minus pounding Connor ever since this line came out.
Yep. I mean, listen, okay. Here we're gonna walk through this. All right. If Conor McGregor wins, Conor McGregor wins within the first 3 minutes of the fight. All right. The under 2.5 is coming in at -125. If you believe that Conor McGregor is going to win, play the under, because he's only going to win in the first 3 minutes of the fight. Okay. If this fight makes it past 3 minutes, Khabib will win the fight. The over 2.5 is coming in at +105. That over is going to happen when McGregor quits if he doesn't win within the first 3 minutes. The things that make Conor McGregor great: spacing, timing, accuracy, power. All of those things got better when he trained for the fight with Floyd Mayweather. Okay. However, none of the things that he was deficient in other than cardio got any work whatsoever in that time period. I know he says he's been wrestling. He's got Dylan Danis. Dylan Danis is not Khabib Nurmagomedov. I don't care what he says. He's not Islam Makhachev. He's not, he's not Khabib. He's not Khabib's brother. He's not all these crazy, super strong Russian farmers in the hills. Dylan Danis is not that. Besides the fact that Dylan Danis is a jiu-jitsu guy, he's not a wrestler. He's not a sambo fighter. That's not the same thing. It's not the same thing. I don't care how much McGregor says he's been drilling these things. If you're not bringing in guys like Jordan Burroughs or guys like that, Ed Ruth, if you're not bringing in big, strong, heavy wrestlers, you're not going to win this fight as far as wrestling goes. McGregor has to use that timing, has to use that awareness, has to use that accuracy, and he has got to hit Khabib early. And in order for that to happen, Khabib has to be willing to stand there and trade with him, which I don't think he should do. I think he should come out and just literally Damian Maya dive for an ankle and try to hold on and then single leg ankle pick him down and then win the fight is what I think Khabib should do, not what I think he's going to do. That doesn't change my pick, though, for this fight. You know,
this one's tough. Like we both said,
it is tough, dude.
Our mind says one thing, but our gut's going with another. I know that we're going to use your pick, and I know I said this earlier in the week, and I said that my mind is telling me Khabib wins this fight. It's almost too easy as far as, like you said, Conor's deficiencies and Khabib's strengths. But my gut tells me Conor, and I hate when the two are going in polar opposite directions. This is a really tough fight to pick, and that's what makes it the biggest fight of the year, because it really could go either way. You know, you're looking at a guy who has just dominated the UFC for a decade on the ground, undefeated. Like, Khabib's no joke. Don't get me wrong. Going up against, you know, arguably the most prolific striker in UFC history in Conor McGregor, two opposite ends of the spectrum, an immovable object and an unstoppable force coming together. And it's such a good fight. I'm so excited for Saturday. Go on with your breakdown. This is awesome.
No, I'm with you. Like I said, at any other time, if it wasn't this fight and people listening to this, and if you've made it through the podcast and you're at this point right now, you're like, dude, Dale, just tell me who you think's going to win. Because if I'm going to bet, I'm just going to bet what you say. And I appreciate that. But here's the thing is, like, on any other occasion, if I didn't have this podcast, if we didn't have this.
No, but we have to touch on it because it is the fight.
We have to. You're absolutely right. We have to. That's what tears me up is that this is one of the fights as a fighting fan, I would just be like, you know what? I'm just going to enjoy it. I just can't possibly pick. How you were saying gut Conor, head Khabib. I'm the opposite. I'm head Conor, gut Khabib. Ever since everybody was like, oh, if Conor only fights Khabib, if Conor would just fight Khabib, you know what? From the time of Morian when that happened, I thought in my head, it'd be a bad matchup for Khabib if he couldn't get in there and get a hold of him, man. Conor could really do some damage. I still think that might happen. I'm going to go with logic, reason, and just general eyeball test here, and I'm going to go with Khabib. I'm going to go with Khabib.
I'm with you, man. It has nothing to do with my like or dislike for either one of these fighters. It's just, like you said, if Conor doesn't catch him early, if Khabib can get his hands on Conor and get Conor's back on the mat, say 2 minutes into the fight, that's 3 minutes Conor is going to spend on his back panicking and trying to not get put to sleep, whether it's a choke or ground and pound, whatever it is, that's 3 minutes Conor is going to be exhausted. And that coming out in the second round is going to limit Conor's power, which is also going to improve Khabib's confidence, you know, in his ability to take him down again. And if it does go to the second round and Conor gets put on his back again in the second round, it's a wrap. His gas tank will be on E 100%. He's not going to have the power to put Khabib to sleep if he is on his back again in the second round. The public likes Conor. Yeah. That's the way the betting is going. I think that has a lot to do with his overall persona and the image he puts off. It's easy to like a guy like Conor McGregor. He is the face of the UFC. So I can understand why the public's betting him. I can understand the whole one punch knockout thing. But like you said, I'm going with logic. I'm going with the overall understanding of fighting. I'm going with Khabib being able to control this fight. I don't know if he wins in a pretty fashion, but I do think he wins this fight.
Yeah, I'm with you. I just 2 points real quick. One of which is that if Conor wins this fight, he's the biggest star in UFC history. There's nobody even close. He dwarfs Ronda Rousey in her prime, in her prime. He dwarfs Jon Jones in his heyday, Anderson Silva, BJ Penn, Matt Hughes, Chuck Liddell. If he wins this fight, he's the biggest star in UFC history. If he isn't already, but you can make arguments for other people, he's the biggest star in UFC history if he wins this fight. Real quick, I want to wrap this up. Fun prop bets that I suggest people play. Bruce Buffer's tie, whether it's going to be a regular tie or a bow tie. Bow tie is coming in at minus 165. Bruce Buffer loves to look fancy.
Oh, yeah. For a fight loves to look fancy. Bow tie 100%.
Bow tie 100%. There's no way he's going to wear a regular tie to announce this fight. Now, keep in mind, the play is that he has to wear the bow tie when he announces the Khabib versus Conor fight. So, you know, Bruce Buffer, he also changes jackets a lot throughout events if it's a big event. Not only do not get discouraged if you come out and you turn on a TV and he's wearing a regular tie. For the Conor Khabib fight, he will put on that bow tie. Minus 165. Other one, glove touch before the fight. Minus 140 says no. Absolutely go with that. Press conference today, this line will change. By the time you guys hear this, this may change. At the press conference today, Khabib said he will not shake Conor's hand. He's not going to shake his hand, win, lose, or draw. He's damn sure not going to touch his glove. Minus 140, money to be made there. Last two prop bets that I like for this fight, Khabib by KO, TKO, or submission at plus 120. This fight will not go the distance. Khabib will win inside the distance if he wins, and at plus 120, that's easy money to be made. You know, just Khabib inside the distance, if it's not by KO, TKO, or sub, plus 130. So also money to be made. Good opportunities to make some money there.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to bet Khabib, I agree. You might as well bet him inside the distance too, because, yeah, like I said, Conor's going to be gassed. I don't think that once he's on his back, I don't think he's going to have the mental fortitude to last the entire fight.
No, I don't think so either. I think it's pretty much done deal after that. But all right, well, that wraps it up for this, man. We're UFC 229 is going to be the biggest fight weekend of the year, probably, until we get to like the New Year's Eve card and stuff like that. We'll see what happens. So that's it. That's all I got for this weekend, man. I hope everybody enjoys the interview. I hope everybody has a good, safe weekend. And, you know, like we said before, bet responsibly and make sure to follow us on all our social media accounts. Feel free to join our Patreon page. We get those 5 additional picks. I will be breaking down the entire UFC card as a token of my love and appreciation for all of you guys on the Patreon this week. So join the Patreon, get the full card breakdown, in addition to five other football picks as well. So it's quite the bargain. $10. So patreon.com/fistfulofcash. Feel free to like, subscribe, and review on iTunes. That stuff does help, and it makes us feel good. That's all I got. I'll talk to you guys on Tuesday. Good luck, everybody.
As always, guys, clear eyes, full fist, can't lose.
Credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.